Dear Radha, can you please talk about the relationship between love and compassion? To me, it seems like they are related in so many ways. I think that basically they are the same, except the relational way that they're being expressed. Like when compassion takes place, the feeling of compassion is evoked from you by somebody's situation. Compassion comes when you have compassion for somebody because you have empathy and there's a problem that that person is dealing with, and it evokes your compassion. Yeah. But how is that compassion different than the really source of your being? It's just that the vritti, the thought modification in your mind is tailored to your love for that person and your empathy for that person. And so, in that way, if you look at the whole positive spectrum of emotion, all of them, in one way or another, reflect your own nature. They resonate with your own nature, the ananda, the wholeness, the fullness, the total unconditional acceptance, the total unconditional love or respect, without any words, without any action. That's all just contained in your own swabhava, your own swarupa, your own nature. But then your nature is reflected in your thought modifications that we call vrittis. So these vrittis differ slightly from one another. So one type of vritti is evoked in turn when a compassionate situation arises. But the expression that that vritti holds is totally resonates with your own being. And so when you have a vritti like that of compassion, you're happy to have that vritti, you welcome it. It is something so beautiful that you're glad that you have compassion. It's like an honor to have that type of a thought, you know. When you feel love for a person, care for a person, or just love for a person, that can be a little bit different in quality, but there's still no rejection of it. It's something that you're so happy to have that feeling because it totally resonates with your own being. You know, joy is another one, you know, sympathy. The huge different words we have for the positive spectrum of feeling, the positive spectrum of emotion. But the positive spectrum just means that those vrittis don't cover, or they, I would say, it's not that they cover, their nature resonates with you, with your nature. And so say you say that really the source of love is your own being. It's the very nature of ananda. Then that ananda expresses in these different ways, all of them, all of the positive. Whether because you welcome those type of vrittis, you feel at home with them. So that means that they're not at odds with your being, with the nature of your being. So that means they're just, the vrittis are just modified slightly in this way or that way to be compassion or joy or sympathy or love or care or all of the words that we have, you know. But all of those are just like manifestations or slight differences that cause for a different quality of reflection of my being. But I own them all. None of them I want to get rid of. I'm happy to have all of those. Whereas the negative spectrum of emotion, those type of vrittis or the stress that's held in those vrittis do not resonate with me, with who I am. And so they're like a foreign invader in a way. And there's something I want to get rid of, you know. I want to work to get rid of them. In Antakarana Shuddhi, I want to outgrow those. I don't want to behave or feel or think in such a way that those negative types of emotions are there, like dislike or hatred or jealousy or envy or despair or depression. All of these things, all of these states of mind are ones that do not resonate with me. And so I feel, it feels like darkness for me when those are there. I feel away from myself, you know. But what is in terms of gaining, for you to gaining knowledge, gaining self-knowledge, just think of this whole spectrum, all of the positives that totally resonate with me, reflect me as though they're sitting totally at home with them. But they are all vrittis. They're all different levels of relaxation and shanti in the mind. Just different, little different modifications of shanti, of peace in the mind, that like a clear water bucket or a clear lake reflect the sun. The sun seems to be shining there, so there's a great resonance. So all this positive emotions, the self resonates with them. It's like the sun shines brightly in those. But in the negative spectrum, those are all vrittis also. That same sun, that same self, does not reflect it. And so as long as I'm identified with the mind, right, as long as I'm identified with the mind, I really require the positive spectrum so that I can feel like myself. And I want to get rid of the negative spectrum because I don't feel like myself when those are there. But for a jnani, for somebody who has knowledge, I'm not the positive spectrum or the negative spectrum. Those are thoughts. Those are different modifications of the mind. Right? And some modifications of the mind reflect me and others don't. Some resonate with me, others don't. But I'm not the positive or the negative. I'm the one who's there, present as the self for all the reflections. It's like one sun, many reflections. The sun isn't becoming happy or sad. Because there's positive reflections that the sun doesn't say, oh, thank goodness, finally. Or there's negative reflections the sun doesn't say, oh, no, I can't live with those. You can't be like that, I can't be like that. Because it's not like that. It's only the sun. It's always the same. And you are always the same. It really doesn't matter. This thought or that thought, or so you have a funny thought, or you know, some sadness comes or whatever. That's all it is. It's some sadness. You are not sad. Your being is the one that really illumines that sadness. But it's not touched by it. And so as soon as that, what we call that viveka, becomes very clear, then the resonant thoughts can just kind of be with you, beautiful, and the negative thoughts can be comforted by your being. Right? The negative thoughts can come home. They have a sanctuary. They can come home to your being, you know, because your being, you, are totally... Without words, you're totally welcoming. Without any words, without any effort, just as your own nature, you're totally welcoming to whatever thought or feeling is there. There's no rejection. The Atma, yourself, rejects nothing. Think of the sun. The sun is shining, and then there's this where the chandalas, the dog eaters, live in the slums of India, calling it the chandalas. And the gutter water is just full of filth. And the sun is shining, illumining all of that filth, filthy water, reflecting in the filthy water, you know, of the gutters there. And the sun doesn't think, It happily just illumines. It's a sangha. It just simply is. And it gives the same luminosity, its same being to the gutter waters as it does to the pristine rivers that we just saw. The beautiful river we just saw is so, so pristine, so clean, so sparkling, so pure. And the sun is illuminating that as well as the chandala gutters in the chandala community. It doesn't have a preference. Gives exactly the same. It's exactly the same. You know? You can, when you're in the dark side, the mind's in the dark side, then it can take refuge in me. And in the light side, it just absorbs itself in me. But whether it's the light or the dark, there's no difference in me. And that's a fact at all times. It's not like your being is ever covered by anything. And so you think, well, the dark side, it's a cloudy day, and so I can't see the sun. No. You are the sun illumining the clouds. You're never covered, ever. So it's just a matter of viveka. It's a matter of discrimination where you recognize yourself as you are, as you always have been and always will be, is completely present without any covering whatsoever at all times. It's just that because so much focus is on the mind, the happy mind, the sad mind, the hurt mind, etc., we're only recognizing myself through the lens of the mind rather than recognizing myself from my own standpoint. Once you can do that, just a little flick, because it's already that way, but once you notice it, then you're the stable one. The stable being that you are present to whatever conditions that your mind has to give. Actually, you only experience your mind. But just think about it. Your eyes, your sense perception, gives a thought modification which you illumine. Right? You're not seeing anything out here. You're seeing the thought modification which is given to you by your eyes or by your ears, and that's what's illumined by you. You know, so whether it's a dream or a thought modification, whether it's a perception or an imagination or a memory, these are all thought modifications that are illumined by conscious being. So some of them are, you feel that they're external because they are you are gaining them through your sense perception, right? And so your sense perception will look outward. And they are external in that sense. But what you're really experiencing is the internal antakarana vritti, thought modification, that then is illumined by you, you know? So that's kind of a important thing to recognize. So I'll just throw this in, we'll do it later, but just in case you're ready for it. You can have a thought modification given to you by your sense organs. Like right now, I'm looking at you, I have a thought modification of this room. And then that gives me through my sense organs, I see you. Then I have a thought modification, which then I'm aware of, right? So I am the consciousness which illumines that thought modification. If I look this way, now I have a totally different thought modification because my eyes are directed in a different direction, right? But in the same way as thought, the consciousness that illumines this thought modification, it illumines that one, it illumines this one, whatever. Now, what if I ask you to have an imagination? Imagine some beautiful scene that you love. Now, again, your mind has a thought modification, right? The thought modification now is an imagination. And so now your awareness is illumining that imagination, which is also a thought. What if I ask you to have a memory? Remember something you did yesterday, for instance. Now you have a memory. Now that memory is a thought modification which your awareness illumines. You know? So now, what if you are the ahankara? Instead of being ahankara, an I notion, what if the I is just landing on you, the sun, the conscious being that is illumining whatever thought modifications are there, whatever emotions are there, whatever memories are there, whatever is going on, in whatever you're experiencing, you are the one who is illumining that. Nothing's ever happening to you, the luminary. The thought modifications, the emotions, etc., go on changing. See? So to get back to the question, conscious, whether we say compassion, you know, or love, you know, or joy, Ananda, all of these are just forms of antakarana vritti, thought modifications that resonate with your own nature. And say in the absolute form, your own nature is love. But if we say that, you have to discover the love that is here right now, that is pointing to your being, as opposed to your being reflected in a variety of ways in the mind. Some of those ways that the self is reflected we call love, sometimes we call it compassion, sometimes we call it joy, sometimes we call it bliss, sometimes we call it ananda. We have so many different names for your own nature. But the source of anything of those is just simply the ananda of yourself that we can call love. Does that make sense? Yeah. So... If nothing really happens in the mitya world, like in a lucid dream, what's the point of upholding dharmic causes such as environment, vegan, etc.? When we say that nothing really happens, what we mean there is that to the essence, like to what is actually there, like say for instance in the dream, what is actually there is the satchit, conscious being. The mithya world has no being other than that, right? Just like the pot has no being at all other than the clay. The only thing that is really there is clay. And as you squash the pot into a plate, nothing happens to the clay. Clay remains clay. See? So when we say, if I say, like an example I used today or the other day, when you wake up from the dream, you realize that nothing has happened. Because what is actually there, the truth of the dream, is just remains completely untouched. The truth of your being remains completely untouched. There is no death experience at all. Even though the whole world has gone away. The whole world has gone to smithereens, but there's no death experience. There's no experience of loss. Not the slightest. Your being remains completely untouched. Because what is mitya, like for instance the pot and the clay, it's really not there. Really the only thing there is clay. So go from the, think of the clay pot and then look at the clay pot from the standpoint of the clay, and where is there anything there but clay? There's nothing but clay. And so how can anything happen when there's nothing but clay in terms of the nama rupa, in terms of the name and form? Say I take the pot, which is nothing but clay, and I mold it into a different pot or into a plate. Nothing is happening to the clay from the standpoint of the clay. It hasn't changed at all. Nothing has changed. It is only clay. The clay experience is the clay experience. That's it. And so here, if we say, like the pot, this whole creation, this whole world that we experience is mitya. Mitya means there is really nothing here except for conscious being. From the standpoint of consciousness, if I were to say what is here, I am. It's just me. It's only conscious being. There is no other thing here. Because mitya, anything that we classify as mitya, cannot be a second thing. You know? And yet, okay, and yet, there is a pot. Right? So from the standpoint of the pot exists. But in reality, the existence of the pot is only the existence of clay. So we would say, in reality, this entire creation is nothing but the Satchitatma. It's nothing but me. I am what is here. Right? There is no second thing here. But from the standpoint of the creation, from within the creation, like the dream character within the dream, this creation, this manifest creation, has what Swamiji will call an infinite order. Everything is in order. Like he will say, the psychological order, the biological order, the geological order. You know, all of the laws, the astronomical order. Everything follows laws. Everything follows order. There's also so the order of dharma and adharma. That is an order. There's a psychological order. The order of dharma and adharma is something that's universal that all beings experience. All human beings experience. I don't know how animals experience dharma and adharma. They may, there may be some way. But this experience of dharma and adharma is really, in a sense, on one level, a psychological experience. Adharma gives you a negative psychological experience. Dharma gives you a positive psychological experience. Adharma, you feel like you're putting your hand in the hand of your mind in fire. You know, the effects of adharma are immediate psychologically. You know, you feel estranged from yourself, you feel some pain, you feel hurt. Or the way you treat others is the way you feel. That's like a psychological law. And it's the immediate effects of dharma. So, say if you treat others, if you are caring and loving toward others, then you experience that. The same love that you're giving is the love that you experience. The same anger that you're giving is the anger you experience. So these are laws that they're an order that just govern the world, you know, and they govern my well-being. And then when we look at it more in terms of, we haven't talked too much about this really in any depth in the class, but that order that we experience as what I would call a drishtapala. Drishtapala means the immediate result of dharma and adharma, really taps into my, the psychological order of the pain I experience from my own adharma and the pleasure and happiness I experience from dharma. Okay. But then in terms of karma, the what we call adrishtapala, which means the unseen fruits of my action, those dharma, the results of dharma and adharma, are what we call punya and papa, which go into what we call a sanchitta, which is a file, which is responsible for my next birth. And so the adharma, the unseen results of adharma, will result in the type of manifestation, type of birth I take, positive and negative. You know, and so in India, because this understanding of dharma and adharma it's in the pores, it's totally assimilated in the person, that your actions of dharma, adharma, not only reap immediate results in terms of your well-being, but they are responsible for your next birth also. And so the whole creation, Ishvara, is the greatest teacher, because to the degree that as a jiva, we're in harmony with Ishvara, with Ishvara's order, we're not going against it because of my own raga dvesha, we experience kind of how Ishvara is free and whole in the experience of the creation. To the degree that you're in dharma, your own antakarana is, your own mind is at home with the whole. There's no rub. And so you also experience great peace, and then the dharma protects you. You know? That's how we say, even in the next birth, the dharma is what protects you. A dharma is punishing. It's a natural punisher. Just like the world, there's so many things you learn that you just can't do because it's painful and hurtful and you have to be careful. You know? There's all kinds of things. The world teaches us how to be careful, how to not get hurt in the world. You know, I mean, just even physically. We learn by experience. Psychologically also we learn. By through dharma, adharma, we learn over and over again, you know, how we have to be toward others in order to really feel at home here, feel at peace here. And the universe goes on teaching and teaching and teaching. We go on learning until finally, before a person becomes an mumukshu, the very most important thing for you to follow is dharma, because there is no shanti really without it. Say you have some pleasure, you want something, you have to go against dharma to get it. You'll get it, you'll have some fun, but underneath it will not be fun. It will not be nice. You'll feel guilty, you'll feel worried, you'll feel unhappy as you're having a good time. You're having this good time, you know, having it at this party, but underneath you just feel unhappy and hurt and worried and awful. So we learn. We learn, okay, I can't put pleasure before dharma. I can do all kinds of pleasurable things, but they can only be within dharma. Then they're fine. No problem. But anything that goes against dharma, I have to stay away. It's way too painful. And that's, we keep learning and learning and learning that. And so now, if this question, you know, why be an environmentalist? Why be vegan? You know, why be good to others? Well, because that's dharma. That's the nature of the creation. You know, that's the ahimsa. That's how the laws of the creation. And if you want to be protected by dharma, to be whole, to be complete, to be one with Ishvara, you know, to be full, you learn that that's That's what the universe teaches you. And so that's why we do it, because that's what the universe wants. That's what Bhagavan wants from us. And so when we go against it, it's painful. And so we learn not to go against that. You know, it's not even, not that we're all trying to be saviors or anything like that. It's not that. It's that that's what's expected of us. And who's expecting it? Well, you can say, well, Bhagavan's expecting. No, he's not looking down and saying, no, look at it, you're misbehaving. He doesn't have to. It's you yourself, as you go against the laws of the creation, you know, that you yourself reap the results of that. So you're self-taught all the time how to, because you have free will. In Bhagavan's creation, human beings have this free will. You're put in this amazing situation where you can make choices. You know, and so do the choices that we make, are they in harmony with the natural laws of the creation? Or do they go against the natural laws of the creation? And what do we mean by being in harmony or going against? All we mean is that those behaviors that are in harmony with the creation mean that I feel harmony. I feel in harmony. That's all we mean. I feel in harmony. I feel happy. I feel complete. I feel one with Ishwara. I feel loved. I feel whole. That's what I mean by in harmony. It's how I feel, you know? And behaviors that go against that natural dharma, it's not that it's going against exactly, but because there's room for those actions. But those actions, those type of actions, create tension and stress and pain and hurt and isolation and anger and feeling rage and incompleteness. All of those type of behaviors that evoke those type of feelings are like waving their hand at you. Wait, wait, something's wrong. You see how you're feeling? You don't feel good. You know, come back. Get back to where you belong. Get back to where you belong, because you're really hurting yourself. You're hurting others, but hurting others, any hurt that you give to others, you are experiencing that hurt. That's also a law that we don't always recognize. You feel some justice for your rage and whatnot, so you're raging at somebody and pounding away at them. But you're feeling all of that. Yeah. So at some point, you keep learning and learning until this jiva actually blends in with Ishwara. There is no jiva, really. In the end, all the behavior of the jiva, this individual, is just the behavior of Ishwara. There's no rub at all. That you need self-knowledge for that. And you also, as you're gaining self-knowledge, you need karma yoga, which we'll see more in class, that karma yoga is a certain attitude where Ishwara comes first, dharma comes first, pleasure and pain are irrelevant. You know, what my raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes, irrelevant. They're irrelevant for mumukshu, because the ananda that I'm seeking never existed there, out there, never has, never will. So your raga dveshas are irrelevant. What is relevant is dharma. Yeah. If it's a raga dvesha, they don't go against dharma in any way. You don't even notice them. They're just part of being alive. So this issue only comes up when something is going against dharma. Then the raga dvesha is totally irrelevant in reference to dharma, because in truth, the ananda that you're seeking is only your own being. There's nowhere to go. There's never anywhere to go. In fact, to the degree that you superimpose ananda on anything external, it's going to be dukkha, because it doesn't exist out there. We're trying to stick it onto something and go grab that thing, but it doesn't exist on that thing. It's just not going to work. Ever. Never works. Cannot work. So we discover that over and over and over and over again until finally we let it come to our consciousness. Yeah. So.
Shall we chant some Mrityunjaya?